speaking on the issues that impact. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome, my friends, to another day, another week on the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. Yes, we're here. We're back again. And it's been one awesome weekend for a lot of people. But the world is on fire, my friends. We have seen something happen this weekend, which was totally shaking the foundations of the prevailing world order. For decades, the West has been pushing Iran, one of the supposed axes of evil, as George W. Bush put it, into military conflict in the Middle East. They've been pushing, they've been cajoling, they've been bombing, they've been pressing and prodding, they've been trying to make Iran enter into the fray. And the Iranian response to Israel's targeting of the Iranian embassy was concise. What we saw unfold was a targeted strike aimed at the apparatus which allowed the embassy strike to happen. In that sense, Iran made a very clear statement. But that statement will be used by the West to expand the targeting of further Iranian targets. This is not World War III. I know it looks like it is. I know everybody's screaming and shouting like it is, and it's trending on every platform you can possibly find. The internet is abuzz right now with fear and drama concerning the strikes. But the internet is always abuzz with fear and drama about most things, even dogs and cats. So, I mean, you make of it what you will. Sure, there will be a wider conflict. Sure, there will be some rocky times ahead. But nothing is for certain, especially in an election year. That may be the most worrying part of any potential armed military conflict raising or rearing its ugly head right now. A war with Iran could be used as an excuse to make the US population feel that a change of leadership is dangerous during a time of war. Often, authoritarian leaders create conflicts or other significant events to increase their support at home. For example, October 7 itself was politically convenient for Benjamin Netanyahu, who was facing rebellion amongst Israeli voters. But as soon as the conflict in Gaza began, these concerns were put aside by most Israeli citizens, at least until after the war. We also now know that Israel began drawing down its defences before October the 7th, even when they had masses of credible evidence pointing at Hamas attacks being organised and being imminent. By that, I'm not insinuating that the Israelis planned October the 7th. No, I'm instead quite clearly stating that they let it happen for strategic reasons. And so the embattled Benjamin Netanyahu could continue his reign unabated. Even though Joe Biden's terrible poll ratings would benefit from World War III, Trump and the Republicans would likely gain support, as Trump already spent his previous term as president acting as a global peacemaker. The fact that it's an election year in the US and the UK likely played a big role in Iran's decision to launch their first attack on another sovereign nation in hundreds of years. Iran is like every other Middle Eastern power. They have been under attack by America for over 70 years. It was the second coup enacted by the CIA in 1953, which saw Mohammad Mossadegh overthrown in a plan drawn up by the grandson of President Theodore Roosevelt and others. That was when the war between Iran and America really began. But even after the Islamic Revolution, American intelligence were engaged in secret meetings with high-level Iranian state actors such as General Mandani and Pasandida himself, meetings which led to a political coup in America, which ousted Jimmy Carter and saw Reagan and Bush installed into the White House. Iran has been a powerful force on the world stage for centuries. They are not like Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, or Syria. They will not be so easy to invade or overthrow. They are not without significant allies, and the West has already spent years showing Iranians what the influence of Western democracies does to the countries in the region. And they do a lot. It doesn't matter how upset the Iranian people themselves are with their own government. They'd prefer their current regime over the instability, death, and destruction which America has to offer them. And that is all America has to offer the countries in the Middle East. Personally, I hope that Iran continues to strike Israel and that eventually they stand up for the Palestinian people and they aim to stop the genocide which is currently happening in Gaza from continuing. Only action by countries in the Middle East will stop the racist, apartheid Israeli regime from continuing to murder civilians in a conflict which Hitler himself would be proud of. Now, why not give TNT a follow? We are on all major social platforms, including Facebook, X, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So here we go. On Saturday, Iran carried out his long-promised retaliation for Israel's airstrike on its consulate in Damascus, launching a massive barrage of missiles and drones, which seemingly almost threatened to kick off World War III, but in retrospect, ultimately wound up being no more than a bunch of saber rattling. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark. My man Ruckus, how are you today?
Good. I'm very happy that we all survived what could have potentially, possibly, at least what the whole world was supposed to think was World War III. Is this it? Hey, you know, we have good reason to suspect that this is a bad idea when Iran, for the first time ever, decided to directly attack Israel. Now, clearly, they probably had the right to do so, depending on how you sit, which side of the aisle you sit on, you might feel one way or the other about this. But hey, listen, just ask yourself, what would you do if another country leveled your embassy? You know, you'd probably retaliate. This was clearly no surprise. There were a few of the headlines, a few of the outlets, as expected, Johnny, who were trying to trick everybody into thinking, oh, this came out of nowhere, when clearly this is obviously in response to what took place on April 1st with Israel's attack of the Tehran's consulates in Damascus. They lost some folks, some high-ranking generals, and from that moment forward, Iran promised that they were going to do something. In fact, what they promised was that they were going to retaliate, but it would be calibrated in order to avoid an escalation into a full-scale regional war. It looks like they have followed through on their promise, Johnny. So, this was nothing to be too frightened of, but certainly to witness this display of aggression taking place, the footage was something else, especially to see the projectiles. There were over 350 of them combined when you take into account the missiles and the drones. You could see footage of them being taken out by, you know, countermeasures right over the Ala Mosque and the temple and all that stuff. It was like, wow, it just really looked biblical. It felt biblical. John, Pastor Haggy came out and he's like, yes, this is it. This is it, folks. Hold on to your butts. This is the end. This is what we want. Folks like John Bolton and, you know, the usual suspects are all excited, thinking this is it. We're going to do it. They have since said, oh, how dare you, Joe Biden, because Joe Biden said, look, we're not looking to escalate. So the war hawks are upset with that decision. Trump is blaming Biden. Biden is blaming Trump. We're getting a lot of that kind of tit for tat. Israel has met finally now with their war cabinet. And I do have a statement. This is the newest update, according to the country's Channel 12 broadcaster, Reuters says Israel wants to embark on action against Iran, coordinated with the United States. Of course, we have yet to see if the United States is going to be down for that, because the president of the United States has told Israel to take the win, is how he earlier described it. Basically, the vast majority of the countries in the Western world, Johnny, have come out and said, look, we don't want to, you know, support any, you know, retaliation from Israel for retaliating against Iran for retaliation. It's just a lot of tit for tat. And there's no reason for this to escalate into World War III. But we shall see. Earlier, just a little while ago, the Wall Street Journal issued a mid-morning report citing U.S. officials who predict that Israel will quickly launch a military response on Iran and that it's expected to come as early as today. I don't know. We'll see. But what are your observations about this whole thing? Did you watch some of the footage? Did you think this was going to escalate into World War III, or was it, you know, exactly what was to be expected?
Yeah, I think I nailed this one this time. I just saw it and said, nah, that's all we're going to see for the time being. I mean, it's likely to be some sort of response in the future. This was very dangerous from Israel, not because of the sparking of World War III or anything like that. It was more dangerous because it showed that they are much weaker than a lot of people think they are, that people are not afraid to attack them back, that people are not afraid to take a swipe when they've taken a swipe at them. That is an extremely important moment. I think it's understated how important it was for Iran, however successful the attack was, to take action again in response to what happened. It was such an important moment for Israel to realize that not only that, but they can, you know, they can try and cause World War III, but it's not going to be that easy to drag people in. Now, the neocons, of course, like John Bolton and others, would have been, having neocon party time on all through the start of the weekend, only to discover that Genocide Joe himself isn't interested in increasing it anymore. He's just happy with the way the genocide. Go for the win. You've already got the win. You've already killed over 10,000 children. Go for the win. That's kind of what it feels like to me. Now, I heard a lot of things. I like to keep my finger on the pulse, especially in this job. And I hear a lot of people speaking. There seemed to be a lot of moral relativism being thrown around as soon as it has happened. The what about, it seems to throw about. And I'm looking over in the chat now, and I'm seeing Johnny Dollar say, I was born in Iran and have lived in the UK for 50 years. I'm afraid you are all under an illusion and just read scripts when it comes to how evil the government in Iran is. Indeed, the Iranian government, just because a load of us are so happy that someone's finally responded, doesn't mean that we're all on board with the Iranian regime and what they do to their own people and how they act on general. There is great evil, and they are on board with a load of the things the West have done in the past. They've been right on board, including, like I said, the coup at the beginning of the 80s, which saw Bush and Reagan take power. But I think what we have to realize is that what is the other alternative? If the alternatives are Iran is evil, but it stands up for people who are in having some form of genocide, or Iran is attacked by the West and the country is almost completely destroyed, loads of people devastated and killed, like scenes we've seen in Syria, in Libya, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. Is that less evil? The relativism comes out very quickly, that you can see that there is no wonderful way of America to come involved and stop some a power like Iran suddenly from being evil. It's only going to replace it with a different kind of evil, a vacuum of power, and then evil like we've never seen before, and instability like we've never seen before, as we've seen rise up in Libya and other places. I mean, some of the evil in Libya was even worse than Colonel Gaddafi. So I think a lot of this is just lined up for more moral relativism. I think we're going to see a lot more of it, Ruckus. I think we're going to see a lot more.
Yeah, I agree 100% with all of those sentiments. And there was one part of the story that I wanted to leave everybody with because I found it interesting and not a lot of people are reporting on this because it was a spectacular display, a test, as it were, of their defense capability as far as Israel's concerned, who is claiming success against, you know, in this particular, you know, area of defending itself. But it was a costly one, Johnny. Apparently, it cost over $1.3 billion worth of interceptor missiles and other materials in order to bring down Iran's aerial barrages over the weekend. So it did come at a heavy cost, monetarily speaking. So that's always something to consider, my friend.
Yep. Thanks for bringing us the news, Ruckus. Really appreciated it. You'll be back in the second hour, yeah, with some more drama, I know.
Oh, yes, sir. We'll see you then.
Excellent. Perfect. Well, awesome. Stick with us. We've got two guests up in this hour, which I am really looking forward to speaking to. You're here with me, Johnny Vedmore, on the Johnny Vedmore Show, and you're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
Only 54% of the residents of Ethiopia have access to electricity. Wah, wah, wah. Ethiopia's leaders are making the country go all electric vehicle when nearly half of the population doesn't have access to electricity. That's commitment. My mind is blown. Do you understand what I'm saying? A country which one of the among the poorest in the world is banning gas-powered cars, EV only, no imports. They're doing their part to fight, quote, planet warming pollution, unquote. And almost half the population doesn't even have access to electricity.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. My first guest this hour is an extremely interesting man who needs a lot more time to explain his current thesis. Marc Giraudot is a strategy consultant, a member of Panda. He has written multiple articles on COVID. His new book, The Needle's Secret, Unraveling Vaccine Harm and the Bolus Theory Revolution, presents compelling evidence to suggest that significant numbers of contemporary ailments, including some of the most perplexing and widespread health issues of our time, can be traced back to inadvertent intravenous injection of vaccines and other substances. So without further ado, Monsieur Giraudot, how are you today?
I'm great, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And I know we're going to have to meet again and talk again because this is going to be, as we're going to pack in as much as we can over this next 20 minutes, that's for sure. You are a man with a lot of knowledge. And I read a load of bits about your work. I read a load of extracts, read an article here and there. And then I was like, wow, this is like mind-boggling for me. So I'm hoping you can be as concise as possible. Firstly, can you tell us what Panda is?
Panda is a group of citizens that emerged first from South America. And we've basically been, for the past 4 years, advocating for, let's say, a reasons-based approach to COVID and to the COVID crisis. First on lockdowns and And now also on vaccine mandates and of course vaccine harm.
Awesome. Well, that's a good that is a good group of people doing good things, because that's what we something that was seriously missing at the beginning of the pandemic was people to say the other side of the story and give another vision of what could happen. And I think that was on purpose. So let's get right down to what we in Britain would call the proverbial nuts and bolts. What is Bolus theory?
Okay, Bolus theory is the outcome of 10,000 hours of work. It's I undertook a root cause analysis to try and understand why some people were harmed and why some people weren't harmed by the vaccines. And for the, I'm the only one who's ever done that. I don't know why, but you know, a lot of people just stopped at the fact that, okay, vaccines harm, and you would stop the shots, and you sort of, it was sort of magic. We didn't go deep dive. I did a deep dive for the past 3 years, and what I found was fundamentally that almost or all the injections in the muscle go to a degree or another intravenous directly at that moment. And most of the people are okay because they heal from the harm that happens, but 5% about of people are harmed forever and have difficulty healing or actually die. And there's basically, so that people understand what happens is, it took me a little while to unravel it all. There's 12 different mechanisms of harms. I'm not going to go to the details right now. But there's fundamentally two things that we do when you inject directly into your veins, basically. The first thing that you do is you carpet bomb the lining of your blood vessel, right? It's not the vaccine necessarily doing. It's a bit complex. There are T cells. It's your immune system attacking it. But what you're actually doing is you're sending a group of concentrated particles, vaccine particles, that is 300,000 times more concentrated than it should, down your bloodstream. Okay, and that creates arteriosclerosis, aneurysm, fistulas, thrombosis, and all the things we've seen. It also destroys, it can also destroy some of the organs or the systems, or it can actually create little holes into your vascular system and start neurodegenerative disease, endocrine disorders, infertility, and all of that. So that's one way. And there's another way where fundamentally what you do is you breach the bunker of your genes. And the bunker of your genes are your stem cells, which have been hidden away in the bone marrow and in niches from the blood. And that's why they have a different fuel mechanism. They don't need oxygen. But if you send that group of it's called a bolus, okay, of highly concentrated particles down your bloodstream, it's going to find its way to those stem cells, and it's going to trigger cancer and genetic disorders. So that's the gist of it.
So what type of, because you said that you know, in your work, that it's like a lot of contemporary ailments have been caused by this. What type of ailments are you talking about? Are we talking about everything from just the aching arm all the way up to autism and death?
Yeah, I mean, evidently there are other ways to harm yourself, okay? But I can explain, you know, if you look at the book, I can explain Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, most of neurodegenerative disease, neuropathies, a lot of people have neuropathies, infertility, leaky gut, to a certain degree, I think obesity is related to that, cancer, of course. What else? I mean, just about all the, you know, the what we've seen, and of course, I'm sorry, autism, of course. We've seen the past 40 years, you know, since about 1985, an explosion in the UK, in the US, everywhere, of these illnesses. And I believe that's the explanation. We've increased the number of vaccine doses. And the more you vaccinate, the more that flawed delivery protocol, injection protocol happens and has a chance of harming you. So basically what I'm talking about is repeating billions of times a flawed medical procedure that is harming the world.
Yeah, that is true enough. Listen, we're going to take a very short break for the news, but we'll be back in just a second. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
Good news, people.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Here is your headline.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Israeli military has provided the government with various response options following recent Iranian airstrikes, according to IDF spokesperson Peter Lerner. In Sydney's western suburb of Wakeley, a bishop and three worshippers were stabbed during a service at Christ the Good Shepherd Church, triggering significant unrest. European Union lawmakers have officially approved a new immigration system designed to manage illegal immigration more effectively after several years of negotiation.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction,
misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
So seeing Mr. Giraudoux, seeing as we seem to think that we're advanced, and what you're explaining to me is that the very simple nature of us injecting things that have a lot of different materials into the body and assuming that it just all goes to the right place. When I think about that in my head, it makes me think we're extremely naive. Is this us doing this to ourselves? Will there be a better way to do this? Or is there really no way of entering things into the body without there being some form of negative consequence?
Complicated questions in 5 minutes, but... The first thing is, yes, we're doing this to ourselves. It's quite obvious. I would encourage you to look into Trenkov, which is what happens to bodybuilders when they inject themselves with steroids. They have the same problem. They have this bolus. You would have the same problem if you get a bee sting that actually gets into your vein directly. You might die. So you can get, it explains the dichotomy that you have in the world, where you have people saying it's poison because they got harmed, and people are saying no, I have no problem with this vaccine. So it is nearly impossible to inject directly into the muscle without cutting one, two, multiple vessels, and the pressure differential makes it that inevitably it's going to go directly to a degree or another, depending on how far is that cut from the needle's tip and how big that vessel is. You're going to have different doses going in. And then depending on where it hits, if it hits the muscle, it's going to be okay. If it hits your brain, it's not going to be okay. So that's what's happening. If you've ever used a plunger to unblock a sink and found that you were being splashed through the overflow hole, you understand what I'm talking about. It doesn't necessarily go where you think it's going to go.
Yeah, completely understand that. You've written The Needle's Secret, Unraveling Vaccine Harm and the Bolus Theory Revolution. How hard has it been to promote a book, which is obviously during a time of such ridiculous censorship?
I've just started. The book came out 3 weeks ago. So it's been hard for the past 3 years to promote the theory, or 2 years to 2.5 years to promote the theory, because I'm stuck between two camps in a way. But I'm getting more traction now. Brett Weinstein has talked about my theory on Joe Rogan. He's talked about it on Tucker Carlson. So it's getting traction. You know, if you do solid work, which I have, and anybody who reads the book will see, it's extremely robust. Especially, you know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a biologist, so I'm not going to write a book without it being extremely robust about it. Otherwise, I know I'm going to take a huge amount of flack. So I think the timing is right. But yes, people are going to have to struggle with the cognitive dissonance that occurs with that, because it's going to scare people. The good news that I bring two good news to finish our interview, Johnny. The first one is not everybody's been hit. Okay. So a lot of people have been scaremongering, people saying, you know, everybody's going to die. That's not true. De facto, if you get a decent injection, it's going to trickle. It's going to be okay. I checked it on my son. Thank God. The other good news is that once you understand the mechanism of harm, there is one therapy that can be helpful to the world right now, and I have no interest in it or financial interest, but it is, from what I've learned in the literature, it's oxygen therapy. Oxygen therapy is like a universal cure, because it's going to stimulate stem cells to go and repair the damage that has been done. Sometimes the repair is impossible, but often it's going to work, and it's especially for microperforations, and it's going to improve the lives of many many people who have been harmed. So there's a lot of hope in my book.
When you see the level of the vaccine protocol, the amount of vaccines that are being given to children, and the amount of injections that are happening, do you now see this as kind of like the same as when nurses in the 1800s weren't washing their hands before surgery?
Yes, it's very much like that. It's actually I feel like Dr. Semmelweis exactly. I think it's related to the fact that it's very hard to undertake a decent intravenous injection. You know, anybody who's been seen a nurse or a doctor do it, it's hard to do it well. And so people have basically formatted the way of they think that it's impossible to do that in the muscle. The problem is you don't need much of the vaccine injected directly into your bloodstream to harm. You know, A few thousand particles that hit your aorta will trigger an aneurysm and a dissection of your aorta. And they're injecting you with 10 to 40 billion nanoparticles. So even a fraction of it can be lethal.
Wow, does make sense as well, because the body is meant to be. I mean, I meet so many people who were very purist about what they put in their body, and then when COVID come along, they're happy for people to inject the unknown into them. And I've just found it ridiculous at times. It didn't make any sense. What were your as an educated, as well educated on the subject, what was the COVID pandemic like for you?
A lot of work. I've worked 10,000 hours. So basically a lot of work. My daughter and my wife got stranded almost a year and a half in Vancouver in Canada. So I was alone in Paris during lockdowns, and I worked and worked and worked, basically.
That's probably the best way to do it, to be perfectly honest, when we're facing such horrendous, I mean, it was a horrendous time for everybody. What do you think people should do to make themselves less susceptible to mainstream medical establishments' marketing messages? What do you think, you know, what's the best way for people to come out of that mindset, do you think?
Well, reading is reading the right people. I mean, reading my book is a good way to start, because I think I'm unraveling a completely new view of the way you harm your body. So it goes beyond that, beyond just the vaccines to a certain extent. So it's interesting to see also that it's not my main message, but I have very serious doubts on the justifications of many of these vaccines. The math isn't there. You know, I don't understand. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but there is something awfully wrong. I understand that some of the vaccines have been pushed basically to sell more. Okay. We had, you know, everybody had chickenpox when they were children, and we were fine with that. So that's certainly not something that necessarily everybody needs. But even some of the other vaccines, I have trouble getting my head around it. I think what I tell people is the following. I think, you know, I respect people's choice. If they're convinced that they need to take a vaccine, take a vaccine. What I could not bear as an individual and a father of four children is that you would actually harm people, and notably children, for life. And as they've been accelerating the number of shots, children would be inevitably harmed. So the thing is, if you get vaxxed, you know, you need to get vaxxed in a certain way to avoid that. So we need to change that delivery. And if people really want to get vaxxed now, or for those who are vaccinating their babies today, they should actually watch out, and they should have, make sure that they're aspirating, making sure that they're injecting very, very slowly, and potentially even, you know, try and negotiate with doctors that they reduce the dose 10 times or something, you know, anything to save those kids.
Thank you for your work. Thanks for coming on and telling us about it. Where can people go and find your book, Mark?
On Amazon, UK, Amazon.com, in France, Australia, most of Europe, Spain, Italy. And they can follow me on Substack. I have a Substack, which is called the Bullish Theory series, where I have about 25,000 people that have been faithful to me for a number of years now.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, and good luck with all your work. Keep it up.
Thank you, Johnny.
Awesome. Right. We'll be back very soon with my next guest. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
Speaking on the issues that impact. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back, my friends, to today's News Talk on the Johnny Vedmore Show. And I am here with my next guest, who is Arti Martello. I hope I'm pronouncing the last name right. Some people like to say Matteo. Who is the host? Good. Who is the host of Thoughtfully Mindless podcast, which is centered around openness and curiosity. At the heart of Arti's mission is a commitment of broadening perspectives, understanding the world and its inhabitants better. I'm one of those. And in addition to the weekly podcast episodes, Arti facilitates interactive spaces on X, where you can find him at RTTM Podcast, where he hosts town hall style discussions, which, of course, I like these stuff. You can also find his work on thoughtfullymindless.com. I like that. So, Arti, welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show. you've been podcasting since 2017. Is it going as planned?
I actually started last year, so it's I'm about 35 episodes in.
Yeah, right. I was looking at your site and seeing that you started around 2017, but I think you must have started upon this road of questioning and doing other things. Yeah. So when did you wake up then in that case? Was it 2017?
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty good time period.
And what was that like for you then?
I just started paying attention to a lot of the things I saw going on. I've always been, you know, an active thinker, watching what's going on in the world. And I started to notice some things that weren't lining up with the groups that I was associating with. Like I was a Bernie Sanders supporter in 2016. And I watched the Russian narrative come out about him, or when the documents got leaked and Hillary Clinton started saying, oh, let's not focus on the content of those emails. Let's focus on who leaked them. And it was Russia. And then I saw Bernie Sanders get screwed over by the DNC and by Hillary Clinton, and then just kind of fold for them. And I didn't like that. And then from there, I mean, it had been going on for a little while, but I just started to notice some things that just weren't lining up. I thought my ideals lined up with some people that were in the same camp as me, and that just didn't end up being the case.
I have to say that my adventure through time has been roughly the same. I had like a fair few waking up moments, but it really was 2016-17 that I become active, and partly for the same reason, partly watching, you know, things not that people who I thought I supported, including, you know, Bernie Sanders. I was believing in the Bernie Sanders train as well. I was thinking, look, he's someone who's speaking differently, ergo I love everything he's saying. But it's not quite like that. Of course, we all get made a cuck in that way, you could say. So what's it been like being a professional conversationalist over the past year, at least?
It's been an interesting journey. I've really enjoyed it. I've always loved talking to people and hearing different perspectives, seeing what makes people tick. And it has just been, it's just been a journey. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I look forward to seeing what unfolds. I'm not the biggest planner, so I don't have any specific agenda or anything like that. It's more just having conversations and seeing what comes of it.
Right. And did you find the jump to live conversations? Because you go on to X Spaces now and do stuff on there. Did you find that an easy transition? Is it harder than podcasting in your estimation?
It's different. Like, you go on to a podcast, a one-on-one interview like we're doing right now, and you have a lot more control over the way the conversation goes. And You're only dealing with one person, so you really only have to deal with one person's tangents or whatever it might be, which is fun. But when you go into a group setting, you're going to invite other speakers up. People are going to have questions, and you really don't have too much say over where the conversation goes. I mean, you're kind of the ringleader in that sense, so you're controlling a little bit, but you're also letting things go the way that they go. You can get some trolls. You can get people who go on for a really long time when they talk, and you just have a lot less control. But it's a lot of fun. It's fun to let other people start conversing with you, just kind of being the quarterback.
Yeah, I'm someone who definitely spends a lot of time speaking, more time than I should. But I've also enjoyed Spaces a lot, but I have found lots of trolls. Do you find a troll a show, or is it less than that? Because I was finding that the spaces I go into, especially when you're talking about things like intelligence, suddenly you'll have like what seem professional trolls pop up. Have you experienced much of that?
I've only had a few trolls, and honestly, they weren't very good trolls. I'm looking forward to the day I get some really good trolls, because there is a troll inside of me too. So I don't mind playing with it a bit.
Yeah, I had a I've had a couple of really good trolls on X Spaces, to be honest. Ones who it turned out they know everything about me, and I've been, oh hello, we're now I don't know which foot I'm on. And often X Spaces, you enter into it kind of like as you would in any space, without any like preconceptions as well. Do you do that a lot? Do you like enter with the idea I'm going to have a conversation and then just see where it turns? Are you like water?
Yeah, that's how I approach most of my conversations, whether it be the podcast or spaces. And I like to just see where things go. I might have an overarching theme of the space or the podcast, but I let things go where they go, and it's a lot of fun.
What's your favorite topics to handle then?
I mean, it's everything. I like to approach everything from a philosophical perspective, but I really enjoy everything. I like politics. I like technology. I'm really big into AI. I love language and thinking about things from that perspective. It's really hard to say, and that's why it's thoughtfully mindless. I can go all over the place, and you can't really define what that is. So it gives me a lot of leeway to move in whatever direction I choose to.
So I suppose that leads me to asking, like a two-parter really. Who are the best people that you've spoken to so far? Who are the people that you've enjoyed speaking to who have been most fun? And who would you love to speak to?
I really enjoyed Dr. Sarah Whalen. We talked about neurodivergence, autism, ADHD, stuff like that. And that episode was kind of a turning point because I stopped with scripting my questions. I just winged it, and she really prompted that. Rachel Oswalt was a lot of fun. She's ex-military. I just released an episode with Brian O'Shea, former intelligence, and he was a lot of fun. I really gain a lot from all interviews. Mark Smith was a former wrestler, now a pastor. He was... It was an emotional conversation. A.C. Bergen Fisher was a great conversation. He had a very interesting past with a lot of abuse, and it was just really interesting. I'm really captivated by a lot of conversations I have with people. As far as who I would like to interview, Jordan Peterson would be cool. Robert Greene would be really cool to talk to. I've really enjoyed his books, and aside from that, there's a book, I can't remember the guy's name, but I've reached out to him, I just haven't heard back. And it's not a big book, it's Letters to My Torturer. It's a guy who was in Iran during the revolution there, and he actually shared a jail cell with Soleimani and ended up being imprisoned by him later. So they were friends, or at least acquaintances, and then he was eventually imprisoned by him, which is just very interesting, and it's quite a story.
Yeah, especially right now. I mean, Iran's a very mixed up place anyway. I was discussing this at the monologue that, you know, a lot of people, they'll say about how evil Iran has been in the past, but it's a like us all, the people who live there probably hate or love their government as much as we hate and love our own government as well. Yeah. And the interesting thing, I mean, Jordan B. Peterson, I've just finished the Who Do They Think They Are, which is a look through his entire family history and going back to 700 BC, because you can, because he's related to the Carolingian lines, the Merovingian lines. He's directly related to Helena de Falaise, who's William the Conqueror's mother, to Edward II, etc. And I'd really like to have a conversation with him, now I've done that, about othering people, and see where we go, because he seems like a very interesting one. But it's quite hard to actually get these people on. Do you spend most of your time trying to like deciding carefully who you bring on to your podcast, or are you someone who has to contact a load of people to see what you get?
I feel like I have a fairly good success rate. At first, I was in some Facebook groups that I would just put out a Google form and let people fill it out. And I would get a lot of people from that. But as it's gone on, I'm a lot more targeted and intentional with who I bring on. So it's hit or miss, you know. Somebody you think that is completely should be willing to come on, you can't reach him. And then sometimes you reach out to somebody who you don't expect to respond and they respond. And, you know, I plan on being one of the biggest podcasts in the world here in the next few years. And it'd be awesome to have, you know, Joe Rogan's type of influence where he just has somebody reach out and who's going to say no to being on Joe Rogan's show. Well, it's not the case when you're small.
Yeah. Who's going to say no? But the problem is, as well, I think you should probably think about all the people who are going to say, yes, you must have me on. And then your show gets swamped with all of the people other people want you to have on rather than yourself. Yeah. So if you ever get up to that stage, to the Joe Rogan stage, be extremely selective, because even I noticed Joe Rogan, and I was saying to someone about this, when you had the pandemic hit and or everything started happening, the people who were manufacturing consent for the establishment went on Joe Rogan straight away. So it'll be the most nefarious people who want the biggest platform, of course, as well. So we gotta always be careful with that. But it is an interesting road, podcasting, and so many people. How much do you feel like you're one in amongst a sea of podcasters, and it is hard to get breath sometime? Or do you find that you've made yourself an area now that's distinct and that people recognize?
I think I'm in the middle. I'm still working on making myself an area. Still trying to build up my following and everything. And it's fun. It's been interesting starting from nothing. There's a lot of up and downs mentally. You know, when you first start putting things out, you're not getting many listens and you feel like you're failing. But I think that's entrepreneurship in general.
Yeah, isn't it? So that's true. So what did you do before all of this then?
I was in technology. So I worked for, I did a bunch of jobs earlier in my life, just almost random. I hate the word random, but I worked for a technology company from 2014 until 2020, Cox Automotive. And they decided to implement vaccine mandates in, I think, October of 2020. And I said no, and I was told to leave. And then 4 months later or 5 months later, I was told by people who still work there that they got rid of the mandate. So I guess it was only of a public health concern for a few months, and then it was no longer needed. But the people who complied with their mandate can't go back on that. And then I worked for another company, WorkWave, for a few years, and I ended that last year.
One of the hardest things for them when they're pushing these vaccine mandates is to get people to take that first step, to get the first jab for whatever reason. And I heard many of my friends say, well, I'm just going to have to, or I'll lose my job. And, you know, that's one of the main tools for it. And nearly every single place dropped the vaccine mandates straight afterwards. It really is. I feel that it was it was one of those hoods that is worn by everyone, and used by every company. So are you going to, are you like the platform you got now, the website you got now, you're just going to stick with that for the time being, develop that, or have you got like grander ideas and aspirations?
Yeah, I want to keep developing that. And then I have a lot of interest in technology, and I want to build some SaaS companies as well. I'm not a developer, so I'm learning a little bit and how to use AI to develop what I want to develop. But over time, I have bigger ambitions than just the podcast, but I'm starting where I start.
Awesome. Well, one last question just before we go. Where does the name Martello come from? Do you know?
It's Italian. I don't know for sure, but I was reading a book and I believe I might be a descendant of Charles Martel. I haven't been able to get any confirmation on that, but just the similarity of the name. And, you know, if you go back far enough, somebody who was very big had a lot of children. So I figure with the similarity of the name, it's a possibility that he's a distant descendant, or I'm a distant descendant.
you'd be related to Jordan B. Peterson then on two separate lines. Anyway, thank you for coming on with us on the Johnny Vedmore Show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Right, stay with me, folks. Oh, don't go changing or rearranging. You should stay exactly the way you are, unless you need to make a cup of tea. Then quick, go do it as quickly as possible. We have a very important guest on in the next hour, the Johnny Vedmore Show. And so don't go anywhere. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.